Finishing our mitzvah Shin Chaf Hei 325, the mitzvah to dwell in the sukkah. We were discussing last time how it's in all places, all times, males and females. So the Sefer Chinuch is saying that there are two main requirements for the sukkah. One is eating, and one is sleeping. So if you neglected to eat in the sukkah or sleep in the sukkah, I mean, eat the things that are required to be eaten in the sukkah. So a bread meal, but a small amount of bread or a small amount of cake or a small amount of food, basically, is permissible outside the sukkah, according to some even large amounts of meat and cheese and fish and things like that.
As long as you don't wash.
According to some, any thing that seems like a formal meal is a formal meal, even if it doesn't contain bread and is required to be eaten in the sukkah.
I've heard, actually, I think it's Brooks Olowski, that he is careful to have water challah the first night.
Oh, we'll get to the first night in a minute. Yeah, we'll get to that. He has a whole separate section on the halachos of the first night. Again, assuming that one is not subject to any of the exemptions, such as being ill or being very uncomfortable, so you neglected to perform the positive commandment.
How about being a female?
If you're male, right. A woman does not have to dwell in the sukkah at all. And so if you neglect to perform a positive commandment, so the Bezdin can force you to do it. So the Sefer Chinuch phrases it over here if you did not eat or sleep in the sukkah, you have these very formal requirements for dwelling in the sukkah, such as eating and sleeping. However, the truth is that the mitzvah of dwelling in the sukkah is not limited to these things. In the poskim, it says that basically during sukkahs, the sukkah is supposed to be your house. You're supposed to move from your house and go into the sukkah. You're supposed to hang out with your friends in the sukkah. You're supposed to learn in the sukkah, assuming that the learning doesn't require very intense concentration where you might be bothered in the sukkah. But like regular, you know, just reviewing, the Mishnah Brura or reviewing the Parshas HaShavua. So that's great, and that's, I'm not trying to dismiss that, Chalila. I just mean that it doesn't require as much concentration as if you're going through the whole sugya and the Gemara and working through all the poskim. So something that requires intense concentration, you're allowed to do lechatchila outside the sukkah. Again, if you could do it in the sukkah with the same level of concentration, that's great. But basically, every minute you spend in the sukkah is a mitzvah. Don't think, in the city, unfortunately, we have this idea where we don't have personal sukkahs, you know, close by to our dwellings. We have this idea that the sukkah is only for eating and sleeping, if we're lucky with the sleeping. I mean, we don't really sleep in the sukkah. We know that we have this consciousness that we're supposed to eat in the sukkah, I mean, to sleep in the sukkah. We know the sukkah is for eating formal meals, but we don't really have the sense that the sukkah is supposed to replace our house during sukkahs, which it really absolutely is. You know, people who have their private sukkahs right off their houses, so they hang out in the sukkah, the whole sukkahs, as much as possible. So that's something very important to keep in mind. You know, it's got to the point, one member of our shul, who grew up in the Bronx, which is also an urban environment, for those who are not familiar with the Bronx, so in those times, so not only did people not sleep in the sukkah and all the and these things, and so they just use the sukkah for eating. But more than that, what people used to do, there'd be a large communal sukkah, I guess. So people used to come to the sukkah, make kiddush. The men, not the women, women with the helm. The men used to come to the sukkah, used to make kiddush, have hamotzi, bench, and then go home and have the rest of the meal, the fish and the chicken and the salads and all these things.
Uh-huh.
In the house, which is really not right, but other people needed the sukkah. Right, they were herding them out, I guess, because the next people needed to have their shift in the sukkah. But to this idea that the sukkah is just for eating bread is really in contrast to what the Torah had in mind in sukkahs, which is that we're supposed to really dwell in the sukkah as much as possible. So again, it's not something that we really can relate to as city dwellers, but it's important Because, you know, if we want to, you know, just sit down and read a book, so you're really supposed to go to the sukkah, but what, the sukkah's down the block? You know, it's also when you have your whole, I like my whole bookshelf available, you know, so I'm reading this book now, so then a few minutes from now, I want a different book. What, I'm going to go to the sukkah with one book, and then I'm going to have to go back to the house to get another book, and then bring it back to the sukkah. It doesn't work. So we unfortunately spend a lot more time in the house on sukkahs than... really, we should be. I always have this feeling on Sukkot, like when I'm just sitting in my house, like I could be. I have the opportunity right now, you know, to be fulfilling a mitzvah. You know, it's one of the mitzvahs that you fulfill with your entire body. There are a few mitzvahs that you really fulfill with your entire body. So you have the opportunity to be fulfilling a mitzvah right now, but it's just not working. So that is a problem. So we should try to move to a building where we can have a private sukkah. Okay. The Laila Harishon continues the Sefer Chinuch. Here we go. We're talking about the first night. So the first night of Sukkot has its very own special. The Laila Harishon, the first night of Sukkot, has special rules. Chayiv kol adam mida raisa, that every male person has the obligation on a biblical level. Lechol ba kizayis pas lechol hapachos. One has to eat at least one kizayis of bread. So why? What's the source for this? Does it say in the Torah anywhere, thou shalt eat bread on the first night of Sukkot in the Sukkah? No. It's a gzera shava, tesvav, as the Gemara puts it, that since we have two major holidays that start on the 15th of the month, one is Pesach and one is Sukkot, so some of the rules, when we have a gzera shava, we have the usage of the term 15 in both places. So some of the rules of Pesach carry over to Sukkot. So just like on Pesach, you're not required to eat matzah the entire time. You may get mitzvah points, according to some opinions, but there's no absolute requirement to eat matzah all the days of Pesach. So the same thing, too, there's no absolute requirement to eat bread during the other days of Sukkot. But on the first night of Sukkot, just like you're required to eat bread in the Sukkah to fulfill the mitzvah of the holiday, just like on Pesach, you're required to eat matzah on Seder night in order to fulfill the mitzvah of the holiday. So you can ask on this, well, that's the case. Why aren't women obligated to eat bread in the sukkah on the first night of Sukkot? They're required, after all, women are required to eat matzah. So the truth is that not all the rules carry over. Just the basic concept carries over. But not every single rule of eating matzah the first night of Pesach carries over to the first night of Sukkot as well. So we have this, you mentioned before, this idea of water challah. So the Mishnah, the Sefer Chinuch over here says you have to eat a kezayis pas, a kezayis of bread. So it's interesting that, because you'd assume, so matzah is bread, so on Sukkot you don't have the rule of matzah per se, but you have to eat bread. But the Yerushalmi actually has a suffix about this. The Yerushalmi says, on the first night of Sukkot, are you required to eat bread? You carry over that rule, or is there no requirement to eat bread per se? Maybe it could be other types of food. According to some, maybe the Yerushalmi means it would have to be another type of food made from grain, one of the five species of grain, but it would not have to be bread per se. So since this is a question about a deraisa, so lemaisa, we're machmir, that we have to eat specifically bread in the sukkah the first night of Sukkot. So if you didn't have these Yerushalmi, you would just imagine that the bread-eating thing is pashut, like the Sefer Chinuch presents it. You have to eat bread! But it's not so clear that it's 100% certain that one actually has to have bread. So some people take this even farther, that if you need bread, so maybe pas haba bekisnin is no good. Pas haba bekisnin means cake. So we know that in halacha, cake is bread with a twist. Cake is not considered to be a separate food called cake. It's bread with a twist. So, meaning, since it's specifically designed not for meals, really, so if you eat a slice of cake, stam, in the middle of the day, so what bracha do you make on it? Make a mizonos, and you make in al hamichya at the end. But what happens if for breakfast you eat a slice of cake with cream cheese and a croissant with cheese on it and a slice of pie with, you know, to fill you up in the morning for breakfast. And then, right, and then you have another type of a pastry, and you put your egg, your morning egg from the, or your kosher bacon, you know, beef, duck, whatever, on top of this pastry, and you eat that for breakfast. So what bracha do you make on the cake? Hamotzi. You make hamotzi on the cake because that's what's called kviya suda. When you use a cake or a cake-like product as the mainstay of a meal, the same way that that one used bread, you see that, oh, this bread is normally eaten as a snack. But see, you just showed that you're turning this bread back into regular bread.
That's right.
So therefore, you make hamotzi and you make birkas hamazon.
So, wouldn't that like negate Mazonos rules, you know, altogether?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So first of all,
Mazonos rules.
So there are certain companies.
Yeah.
There are certain companies that if you look at, if you go to the store and you see certain Jewish companies with 20 hechsherim on the bread, so you have they have a red package of bread which is labeled hamotzi, and you have a green package of bread which is labeled Mazonos. So what's the difference? That one is supposedly made with fruit juice,
mm-hmm.
so it should be more cake-like.
Like egg masa, though, right?
Right. And one is made with mostly water, so that they consider real bread. So therefore, they consider the bread that's made partially or that's made mainly with or exclusively with fruit juice, they consider that to be Mizonos.
Is there any difference between, say, apple juice, stock, it's apple juice.
Yeah.
That's it. And, say, can of frozen apple juice that you've then added water.
Yeah,
to.
So that's part of the issue that some people have with a Mizonos bread, which is that the juice that they use is actually pretty weak, so it doesn't really impact the taste of the bread at all. So, first of all, there are two problems with Mizonos bread, or Mizonos rolls, or any of these things that you get on an airplane, for example, that's labeled Mizonos, because you on an airplane, it's extremely annoying to get up and wash, mm-hmm. and you have to use the bathroom, which is not ideal yet.
Could you get around it just by, say, you know, not touching the bread with your hands, put a napkin or something like that?
Covering your hands in order to eat bread is only acceptable if there is no water available.
Well, okay.
There's no, it's not an acceptable option if you have water within a reasonable distance. And, you know, nudging your neighbor awake to get up to the sink is not considered an unreasonable distance. How big is the airplane already? The airplane is not so big. If you would have water, you know, 500 feet away, you'd also be required to go wash instead of wrapping your hands to eat the bread. Yeah.
Should we note, actually, that last time we had an airplane meal, there was a Mizonos roll, and then there was a note from the OU. Saying, "Don't you dare Nick Mazonos on this. If you don't wash, you're going straight to hell."
Oh yeah, they said
very
that
strongly. Yeah,
I
right.
Like
no, saying essentially, do not pay attention to this.
So the OU is firmer than all the Haredi Chassidish
Hecherim. Let them take out the firmy stuff on that.
Right. So the two problems with Mazonos bread rolls whatever are as follows. So the first the problem is, even if you eat it as a snack, it's not really Mizonos in most cases, because if you didn't know, if you didn't look at the label on the package, that one was labeled Mizonos, one was labeled Hamotzi, you would have no idea which is which. It does not taste significantly different, if at all, from regular bread. And part of the point of Mizonos, something that where the bracha really is Mizonos, has the din of pasav abekisnin, means it has to be immediately recognizable that this bread product is used for snacking and not for meals, yeah?
So, in other words, if we were all yekkas and we only had water challah on Shabbos and Yom Tov, instead of egg challah, because egg challah basically is this like...
Oh, okay.
Nah, that's
okay, we'll get to the egg challah in a second.
And then there'd be a clear difference. And then you say, oh, this is obviously this is cake, this is not, it's like,
Come on.
Right, so the egg challah we'll get to in a second. Oh. Right. Very good point. But so first of all, the Mizonos bread, it's very, it's really the way we have it nowadays. Maybe there are some companies where it's very sweet and you could tell the difference, but most Mizonos bread that I've had is indistinguishable from regular bread. So even by itself, it's hamotzi, it's not Mizonos. And furthermore, even if it were Mizonos, if you eat it as part of your airplane meal, that's called kviya suda, and it would be hamotzi anyway. So that's why it's really not acceptable to make Mizonos on these types of things, especially when they are part of a meal. So So there really is no such thing, basically, as mezonos bread. It's a big michshol, because the hechsherim are saying, we're giving a hechsher that this product is kosher, that it's permissible to eat. Yes, it's permissible to eat mezonos bread if you wash a bench on it. So it's permissible to eat mezonos bread. So it says it has really top hechsherim on it, but it gives you the misimpression that the hechsherim approve of the advertisement that the status is mezonos, which of course was invented by the bakers in order to increase sales. Has nothing to do with halacha. And if you'll find one posek who gives a hechsher on bread who really holds that it's mezonos somehow, and how would be a little bit unclear, but to advertise to the whole world, he has to have some recognition that this is a singular, unique shita, and this is not the normative halacha, even if it is somehow could be justified with some legitimate halachic reasoning.
What's the thing as you brought up about the egg challah?
Oh, the egg challah.
It's meant to
so
be bread.
So egg challah is meant to be bread. That's correct. So that's why, according to the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, so our egg challah is hamotzi anyway, because it's not extremely sweet. It's basically bready. It looks like a bread. It's not used as a dessert. It's used as part of a meal in almost all situations. So therefore, according to the Ramah, which is obviously the basis for Ashkenazi practice, then egg challah is hamotzi anyway. But Sfardim follow the Mechaber and the Shulchan Aruch. They say if there's a lot of... If you can really tell that there's egg in it, even if there's a sweetener in it, even if it's not extremely sweet, so it would still be mizonos. So that's why some Sfardim are machmir even on a regular Shabbos to have water bread and not to have egg challah at all, because they would consider that a mizonos. Even though that's actually quite questionable, because nicer, okay, that's debatable. Some people like the water challah.
I know, me too.
But the problem is that when you have egg challah as part of a Shabbos meal, so that's kviya suda. So even according to Svardim, then it would be a hamotzi anyway. Now, they might hold, some poskim hold that there's a shear. You have to eat like either three or four eggs worth of the bread or the bread product in order for it to be considered kviya suda if the bracha really is mizono. So first of all, if you're going with a super huge eggs, okay, maybe you don't eat that much bread. But in a regular Shabbos meal, it's very likely to eat a real shear of three or four. That's a couple slices of bread. That's not very much bread. So, and certain also some many poskim hold, this seems to be the simple understanding of the din, is that there is no amount that's per se, no objective amount that's required of the bread in order for it to be considered kviya suda. You just have to be. It has to be clear that you're using the cake product as the mainstay of the meal, and that would be considered kviya suda. It wouldn't matter really how much that you eat for the meal. So that's why the simple understanding of the din, even again, you have svardim. This is like the svardi thing that they don't want to be makel on eating egg challah as part of a Shabbos meal. But nevertheless, according to the simple understanding, that according to all opinions, egg challah at a Shabbos meal at least would be hamotzi because that would be considered kviya suda. So some people make challah that's extremely sweet. Not just the regular egg challah you buy from the store. A friend of mine once was eating at Rav Schechter's house for a Shabbos meal, and his wife, she made a really sweet challah. It had cinnamon swirl in it, or who knows. It was mamish like cake. So Rav Schechter made hamotzi, and he was eating it. And he was telling his all his students who were there. He said, this is probably really mizonos, this challah, but we made kviya suda, so it's hamotzi. So it's considered part of the meal. Yeah.
But isn't matzo, when made with eggs, considered to be like mizonos and doesn't qualify for the requirement of eating matzo in the first place?
That's because of two things. So that's because of the din of lechem oni, you have to have poor man's bread, which is not bread which is kneaded with eggs and fruit juice. They can't afford that. They can only afford water. So that's why the matzah for the Seder has to be only with water. But egg matzah, which is made with pure fruit juice and eggs, it tastes obviously different. It tastes much sweeter. It tastes obviously different from regular matzah. So therefore, if you eat a small amount, that might be mizonos, unless you say that this object... Well, first, and if you eat egg matzah with the meal, so it's obviously hamotzi. But some people, you could argue possibly that egg matzah even by itself nowadays is hamotzi, because matzah is considered to be in all forms a food that is eaten by a meal and is not considered to be a snack food, even egg matzah.
Now the question is whether does it satisfy the requirement of matzah on the first seder?
No, that for sure not. Even if you were kovei asud on it, because it's not lechem oni, it's not poor man's bread.
There are also actually, you know, kashrus issues with egg matzah, though.
Correct. So the Ashkenazi minhag, so there's a major machlukas rishonim that what's the din? It's a minakotzel hakotzeh, from one extreme to the other. So some rishonim, the issue is if you use no water when you bake your matzah, when you knead your matzah dough, you use zero water, and you use use fruit juice. No pure, even though that's chemically it's contains water, but no actual water. It was purely came from the fruit. If you knead it only with eggs and fruit juice without any water whatsoever, so according to most Rishonim, that cannot become chametz at all. That even if the dough rises, it will not be chametz, because the Torah definition of chametz means that there has to be some water in the dough. Some people say it's still asur midrabanan to eat, but according to many Rishonim, it's 100% mutter to eat lechatchila if you have dough that was kneaded without any water whatsoever. Then it, even if it rose, you put it near a heat source, it looked completely like bread, you're allowed to eat that on Pesach. However, there's another opinion in the Rishonim, of Rashi, really, another Rishonim, that hold that it's mimahar l'hachmitz, it becomes chametz faster than regular bread, regular matzah,
It has sugar.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to know that the Torah definition of chametz is not necessarily identical to the scientific definition of rising bread. So that's why Ashkenazim have the practice that healthy people do not eat egg matzah on Pesach. But since that's basically a minority opinion, so that it becomes chametz faster. So that's why for little children or for very elderly people or people who have no teeth for whatever reason who cannot chew regular matzah because it's too hard, then we would allow egg matzah. But of course, the egg matzah that we have nowadays is not left to sit out all day long. So even if you hold that it becomes chametz faster, so it's baked pretty quickly. So therefore, even if you hold that it becomes chametz faster, it's still extremely unlikely to be chametz, really, even according to the minority opinion that becomes chametz faster. So therefore, it's not so bad for these people to be, especially on the egg matzah we have nowadays, to be makel to eat them if they have no other option to eat regular matzah. But the Sfardim are makel on this. I mean, many groups of Sfardim. There's a lot of different Sfardim and Hagim. But many Sfardim are lenient on this, and they eat egg matzah. I remember I found in Israel once, before Pesach, they were selling it for Pesach, but I didn't eat it on Pesach, obviously. But before Pesach, I discovered these cookies that are advertised as being made with wine. Pure wine, zero water. The dough is kneaded with 100% wine and eggs, no water. And they taste exactly like regular cookies, and they're sold with a Sfardi Hechsher for use on Pesach. It's amazing.
So what's the problem? So you wouldn't eat it because...
No, Ashkenazim don't eat it. Even Sfardim, there are people who don't like it.
They don't eat it because of what? The eggs?
Because we are choshesh for the minority opinion that it's memaher lahachmitz, that it becomes chametz faster, and not that it can't become chametz at all.
Well, another issue here, if they're cookies, which are... they're not as thin as the matzahs. They're not regular matzahs.
Yeah, but they can't become chametz, according to Sfardi Psak.
If it's fast, you just said that one.
Right. No. Right. I wouldn't recommend them even for Ashkenazim because they're not baked as quickly as the regular egg matzahs. That for sure not. Right there.
So how can they decide what is and what isn't when we don't really know what it means for a food to be chametz?
That's why we have to do like the Masorah. That's why we're supposed to bake matzahs in the same way they always did for generations, and we assume that that's less than 18 minutes, then it's good. Unless the dough's been heated, or has been exposed to a heat source, so if it's been kneaded and baked besides the oven, obviously, if it's been kneaded and baked in less than 18 minutes, so then we know that's for sure good.
I mean, the standard is basically how people made matzah for, millennia, which is, by hand, you go ahead, you
right.
Eat it, and you stick it into the oven, and if that is the definition,
this is right.
So if we have something else like machine matzah or something like that, the question is, does it in fact duplicate
That's why also about machine matzah. So, you know, chassidim, okay, they didn't. So that's why besides chassidim, who, you know, at the time where machine matzahs first came out, so chassidim were very against it because, and other poskim were very against it because, you know, it's new, we don't do new things with matzah, spiritually it's very harmful. But you have even Litvish Rabbonim, so for example, like the Brisker Rav, that he said he opposed machine matzah because even if you could look at it and you could think halachically it's okay, in order for something to be matzah, we know what's chametz in matzah. In order for we need to employ the mesorah, we need to employ the tradition. So if you have no tradition that this exact item is matzah, so therefore who knows what the halacha is, and maybe it's really not acceptable. But of course, most non-Hasidic poskim did not go like that. They went by the pure halacha, and they said, no, so maybe machine matzah is better because you don't have people's hands heating up the dough. It gives the less of an opportunity to maybe become chametz. It can go much faster, more efficiently, and it can be, it's all automated, and it could be even perhaps better than hand matzah. So this is, to this very day, we have different schools of thought about which is better, hand matzah or machine matzah.
Does this apply just to the Seder or for the entire?
The entire Pesach. Chassidim don't eat another. Chassidim Brisker is Chazonishnik, so Chazonish also held like this, that he preferred hand matzah. So those types of people do not eat machine matzah the entire Pesach. They eat only hand matzah. I remember hearing a shiur once from Rev Usher Weiss, who's a very popular speaker even in the centrist Orthodox community in America. He's originally American. He speaks English. So he's a very prominent posik and who lives most of the time in Israel. So he said, I remember one, I haven't heard that much, that many shiurim from him, but he said that in his whole life, not only has he not eaten machine matzah on Pesach, obviously, because he's chassidish, he's a Kloisenberger chassid, but he said he doesn't think ever on Pesach he's even seen a machine matzah. So they take this very seriously. But then you have...
But there's no prohibition against seeing it. I mean,
right, okay.
He lives in a community.
It doesn't. It just doesn't exist. But you have people... you have certain, in the Yekesha community, some people are like this. In the Litvisha community, some people are like this, that they don't allow into their houses hand matzah at all because they are afraid that the human error might cause more problems. And now that we have machine matzah, so then that is better. So again, for most people who don't have a strong family tradition one way or the other, so the normal accepted psak in the regular non-Hasidish centrist Orthodox community is to use hand matzah for the Seder, but the machine matzah is perfectly acceptable for the rest of Pesach. Okay, so how does this relate to Sukkos? Going back to Sukkos. So you have to have hand matzah on the first night of Sukkos? No. The point is that you're supposed to have real bread. So why real bread? It shouldn't be something that's mizonos. Again, why exactly it shouldn't be mizonos is not clear, because you're making kviya suda. So if you have a cake and you're kviya suda on the cake, then that turns it into bread. The din is even by matzah. If somehow you have matzah, that's mizonos, and you would be koveya suda on the matzah, and you'd make kamotzi on it, then that would be acceptable. So why that shouldn't be the case on a sukkis is somewhat questionable, but nevertheless, the pre-megadim has a chumrah for the first night of sukkis that one should be machmir to have real bread. That's for sure hamotzi by itself. You don't have to worry about being koveya suda, not koveya suda. It should be 100% certainly, it should be certainly bread. And certainly, even an extension of this would be that even if something, going even one step farther, is that even if something is certainly hamotzi but still tastes very spiced or sweet, so maybe that's also not good. Again, these are all later chumras that is not mentioned really explicitly before 200 years ago or so. But that's why. So many people are machmir that on the first night of Sukkot, you have something that's 100% absolutely bread, and according to no opinions, would it be considered to be mizonos by itself? It would absolutely be hamotzi. Okay, but that's not the normal minhag. The normal minhag is that the same type of challah as you have throughout the year. Again, so the chumrah not to use cake for hamotzi, that's not too much of an imposition, because most people don't use cake for hamotzi during the year, even though according to some opinions it would be acceptable if you made hamotzi on cake on us on the first night of Sukkot as well. Nevertheless, the normal minhag is that we have regular challah, egg challah, for people who have egg challah normally during the year, and we're not choshesh for this, but okay, some people who want to be machmir are choshesh to have absolutely 100% bread without too much sweetener at all on the first night of Sukkot. I was once at one person's meal the first night of Sukkot, where they literally made bread just with flour and water and yeast. Okay, it's a super chumrah, but so that's the first night. Sha'ar yamim rishus. The rest of the days of Sukkot are optional. So what do you mean optional? You have to wash on Yantif, no? But vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Sukkah per se, then if you would like to eat, especially on Chol HaMoed when you don't have to wash, if you would like to not wash at all and just have foods that are not required to be eaten in the Sukkah, then that is okay, and you could spend all your meals outside the Sukkah in theory. Besides, that's vis-a-vis the formal obligation to dwell in the Sukkah when you do certain activities. But like we said before, really you should spend as much time as possible in the Sukkah, even if you're not doing one, either eating or sleeping. So again, the Sefer Chinuch is going like the idea that it's only bread that you have to eat in the Sukkah. So if you eat a real formal meal where you wash, then obviously that has to be eaten in the Sukkah all the days of Sukkot, but you're not obligated to go out of your way to have a bread meal in the Sukkah any other day of Sukkot. So the question now arises, the famous question about the first night of Sukkot. So since the nature of the obligation to eat bread on the first night of Sukkot is different from the requirement to dwell in the Sukkah for the rest of the nights of Sukkot, so what happens if it rains on the first night of Sukkot? Baruch Hashem, this hasn't happened in at least
a few years.
Probably 5-6 years, if I'm not mistaken.
You wait. More so than you wait on any other night.
Oh! Excellent, excellent, excellent. You wait. So how much do you have to wait? So first, let's go slow. According to some Rishonim, the exemption of mitztayer, just like, you know, in general during Sukkot, you dwell in the Sukkah in the manner that you dwell in your house. So normally, formal meals you eat in your house, but snacks you eat outside the house. So during Sukkot, it's the same thing. So say formal meals you have to eat in the Sukkah, snacks you could eat outside the Sukkah. But on the first night of Sukkot, there is an active obligation to have a formal meal, which there isn't on the other night of Sukkot. So you see that the normal rules of dwelling in the Sukkah in the manner that one dwells in one's house do not apply. So that's why, according to some Rishonim, you're required to eat a kezayis of bread, or some say kibetza, whatever, the shear of bread, that you have to eat on the first night of Sukkot. You eat in the Sukkah, even in the rain. You put on your raincoat. You get a little, you put your bread in a plastic bag, so it doesn't get wet. You eat over, so the rain doesn't get on you, but you might get drenched, but you go into the Sukkah, you make Kiddush in the Sukkah. I guess you have to get a little cover for your wine also.
Did you make a bottle
of the shape of according to this opinion, if you would just ask him, then he would say yes. Because on this night, you're required to dwell in the Sukkah even if it's raining. So if you would ask him, he would say yes. And that's why it says actually in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, Paskins like this opinion, which is why Chabad, the first night of Sukkah, is they make a bracha leish of a Sukkah even in the rain. They stand there in the rain, they make Kiddush, make leish of a Sukkah, they eat a kezayis, and then they go inside the house to finish the rest of the meal. However, we're choshesh, at least for the bracha, like a different opinion. That there's another opinion which is that no, there, if it's raining in the sukkah, you are mitzdayer, you are very uncomfortable, and you are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. So therefore, you would not be required to eat the kezias in the sukkah if it's raining all night long. So in practice, we're choshesh for both these opinions. And the normative practice for the first night of Sukkot is as follows. If it's raining at the beginning of the night, you wait a little bit. And if it doesn't stop raining, and you're getting very hungry, so you're starting to be mitzdayer. Right, so you really want to eat your yontif meal. Maybe you have guests who haven't eaten in a while, and they want to eat the meal. So you go into the sukkah in the rain. You make kiddush without leishah b'sukkah, because regarding the bracha, we're choshish for the shita that you're putter the first night of sukkah is in the rain. So you make kiddush in the sukkah without leishah b'sukkah. You eat a kezias to be choshish for the opinion that you do have to eat a kezias even in the rain, and then you go inside and you finish the rest of your meal in the house. Okay, yeah?
You know, you can't be mostly those people, the women and so on, who aren't there in the rain with you when you're for Kiddush. The women don't have to be there.
I guess so. Unless they want to come out in the rain.
You could make Kiddush yourself.
Yeah.
Right,
they could make Kiddush themselves. There are solutions to that. Yeah, but maybe they want to come outside in the rain and they want to fulfill this mitzvah, maybe, even though they're not obligated. They can fulfill the mitzvah, according to some opinions, in the rain.
So if the women...
Yeah, let them stay inside. Why should they get wet?
But they make kiddush in the house.
Without leishah b'sukkah, yeah. Okay. You make kiddush in the house. Yeah, sure. And there is a third opinion.
There's always that.
That's those two, the two opinions that we mentioned before. Those are the normative ones. But the Vilna Gaon, reflecting the perhaps earlier opinions as well, but the Vilna Gaon has the most machmir shita. He says, not always. So,
right.
He had a lot of coolas.
I take it back.
The Vilna Gaon says, as reported in Maaserav, says as follows, sort of the chumras of both ways. You don't fulfill the mitzvah the first night in the sukkah if it's raining, because when it's raining, it doesn't have a shame sukkah. It's not really considered a sukkah, because a sukkah is representative of your house. And when your house, if it's raining, you want to leave. It's not, you don't really feel like it's your house at that time. Mm-hmm. So when you're sitting in the sukkah in the rain, you don't feel like it's your house. Mm-hmm. However, it's not because of mitzdayer that you don't fulfill the mitzvah in the first night. It's because it's not your house at that time. Mm-hmm. So says the Vilna Gaon, there's no ptur mitzdayer, but nevertheless, you can't fulfill the mitzvah. So what says the Vilna Gaon? You have to stay up all night long
and wait until
maybe the rain is going to stop. Even if though you're mitzdayer, because you're not happy, obviously, at not having your suda and waiting all night long. Although the question is, according to that opinion, so what exactly is the cutoff point?
Yeah.
In other words, because you have to have your yontif meal. So how long exactly do you have to wait? So most people don't go purely like that shita, so they're to the extent that they're choshish for that shita, they eat their meal first usually, and then with a half and half, they start in the sukkah in the rain, and then go into the house,
wait till midnight.
And then just wait till midnight or as much as possible, or they keep waking up every couple hours to check if it stopped raining, so they can fulfill the mitzvah according to all opinions. So the It's not so pashut exactly what to do if it rains the first night of Sukkot, which is why we daven that there shouldn't be rain on the first night of Sukkot. It causes a lot of problems. Rabbi Sobolovsky told a very cute story once, which is that one time it was rain predicted on the first night of Sukkot in Teaneck. So up until right before, 2 seconds before he had to go to shul for Yontif, he was looking at the hourly weather forecast to see when, the rain was predicted to start, minute by, maybe find a miraculous one, he tried minute by minute, for the next hour, when it was going to be. So he went to shul, and they davened mincha, and then before Ma'ariv, he made an announcement. He says, we're davening Ma'ariv right away. It's supposed to start raining any minute. We're davening Ma'ariv quickly. And everybody, after Ma'ariv, you run home. No saying good yontif to your friends. No shaking hands. No staying to shmooze. Don't be offended if your best friend passes you running on the way without giving you so much as a nod. You run straight home and you go make Kiddush and Hamotzi in the sukkah. And he said, they ran home, they made Kiddush and Hamotzi in the sukkah, and immediately after that, it started to rain. Okay?
So how about being mitzvah about sleeping in the sukkah? Are you still required?
There are some Rishonim who have a cute cheetah, which is because of the chibuv mitzvah, just the loving the mitzvah so much that the first night of sukkahs, you're required to dwell in the sukkah. Then they actually slept in the sukkah the first night, even though it was raining. That's not at all normative halacha. That's not required at all. That was just their personal midas chasidus, that their pious, what they consider to be a pious practice of sleeping in the sukkah the first night, even if it was raining. So of course, the eating of the sukkah the first night has to be after tzeisa kochavim. Right, so it has to be nighttime, just like the matzah has to be eaten after nighttime for the seder. It's not an issue because by the time you get motzi matzah, even in your seder, by the time you get the motzi matzah, it's after the most machmir opinion possible about what's considered to be tzeis gochavim, which I don't agree with, but that's no problem whatsoever. But by sukkah, so you have to wait until tzeis gochavim in order to make kiddush, because the kiddush, when you make the leisha basukkah that night, so it goes by, the leisha basukkah goes not only on the dwelling in the sukkah per se, but on the eating of the kezias. So that's why the whole meal has to begin with a kiddush after tzeis gochavim. There's also an eitzah, by the way, a great eitzah I heard, from Rosh Shlomo Miller, who's the Rosh Kol in Toronto, is also a posik in Lakewood, that he says there's a way to get out of the issue of the raining in the sukkah if you have a shlak, if you have a covering over the sukkah, which is removable. So he says, this is a very cute eitzah, you're going to get a kick out of it, I think. So he said, you do as follows. If it's raining in the sukkah, if it's raining outside in the sukkah, so you have the covering over the sukkah, so you go like this. You wash before Kiddush, which some people do on sukkahs anyway, even though they don't do it during the year, so there should be less of a hefsek between washing, because when you go from your kitchen, from your dining room to your kitchen to wash, then back to the dining room, so that's not such a hefsek between Kiddush and the meal, for those who wash after Kiddush. But by sukkahs, if you have to go somewhere inside to wash, then go out in the sukkah, so it creates more of a hefsek between the Kiddush and the washing and the meal, so that's for some people wash before sukkahs on Kiddush, even if they don't during the year. Okay, so he says, that Rav Shlomo Miller says, if it's raining, you put on the shlak, you wash before Kiddush, you go outside, you make Kiddush,
with the shlak on.
And then, quickly, and right before you get to the bracha of Leisha Basukah during Kiddush, you remove the shlak, and you quickly make Leisha Basukah, drink the wine from Kiddush, you make Hamotzi, you eat a Kezias, and you run inside, because the schach provides a little bit of protection. I guess if it's really a torrential rains, this wouldn't work, but it's not going to get to the shear of mitztayer by the time you eat the kezias. Because there won't be so much rain coming to the extent that would ruin the food in front of you. So if it's just a couple tiny drops managing to get in through the schach after you remove the shlak in those 30 seconds, then that wouldn't be the shear yet a mitzvah, and then you could fulfill the mitzvah according to all opinions, then go inside. So if you have a shlak, that works, but a lot of people don't have shlaks. So regarding the Kiddush on the first night of Sukkot, there is a difference of opinion, which is the Rambam holds that in general, he holds like the Gemara, that you make the bracha of Leisha B'Sukkah every time you go into the sukkah. He says, when you go walk into the sukkah, you make Leisha B'Sukkah, then you sit down. Not because he thought that Leisha B'Sukkah really means to sit in the sukkah. It really means to dwell in the sukkah.
Most people sit down.
Right, by the Rambam held that really the manifestation of dwelling in a particular place is the sitting down. So the Rambam holds, you walk in the sukkah, you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaMashiach Kedeshanu Mitzvotav Tzivanu Leisha B'Sukkah, you sit down and then you continue doing whatever you want, and that bracha works for you until you leave the sukkah for any extended period. So the question is, what happens on the first night of Sukkot when Leisha B'Sukkah is part of the Kiddush? What do you do? Your Rambam has a problem, because Kiddush is normally recited sitting down, according to the Rishonim. Okay, nowadays people have the Minhag al-Pi Kabbalah a lot of times to stand for Kiddush, but in the times of the Rishonim, they sat for Kiddush. So Kiddush is normally recited sitting down, but you have a problem, Because if you sit down to recite the Kiddush and then you recite Leisha B'Sukkah, it's too late for the bracha. So Rambam says, he notes that he says on the first night of Sukkot, he holds that you start Kiddush standing up, then you make Leisha B'Sukkah, then you sit down, and then you make the Shechianu and drink the wine and continue with the meal. So that's not, the Vilna Gaon apparently follows that also, but that's not the normal minhag. The normal minhag is one of two things. People who generally sit for Kiddush sit the whole time for Kiddush on Sukkot as well, which follows the majority opinion in the Rishonim that the Leisha B'Sukkah, even if you hold it, you're supposed to do it every time you walk in the Sukkah. It doesn't have to be before sitting down. It's before the activities that you do in the Sukkah. So that's why most people who sit for Kiddush during the year make Kiddush seated and on Sukkot as well. And those who stand for Kiddush during the year stand for the entire Kiddush and don't sit down necessarily after the bracha of Leisha B'Sukkah.
What is the justification for either standing or sitting during Kiddush?
I mean, really you're supposed to sit for Kiddush al pi halacha because it's part of the meal, because you're forming a group.
You mean any Kiddush,
yeah. Any Kiddush, yeah, yeah.
Because it's part of the meal.
It's part of the meal. You're forming an official group where one person makes a bracha on behalf of everyone. Pi halacha is better. It's not necessarily absolutely ma'akev. But it's better al pi halacha to sit for Kiddush. But al pi Kabbalah, this was suggested by some Rishonim as well, rejected by them, but it was the idea was suggested by some Rishonim that you should stand for Kiddush because it's considered like you're greeting the king. So therefore, standing is more appropriate as a gesture of honor.
What about the first kosa on Seder night, though?
What about it?
You always sit for that. People that stand, I've never seen anybody stand up for the first.
People stand for Kiddush on Pesach also. Oh, yeah. There are people who stand during the year for Kiddush who sit for Kiddush the first night on Seder night.
Really?
But there are people who, but most people who stand for Kiddush during the year just keep their regular minhag on Seder night. Then you sit for drinking the cup. Oh. Yeah.
Or you stand for the first bracha Friday night and then you sit.
You mean the Vayichulu. So that's standing for Vayichulu is not halachically.
It's for the Eidus.
It's just a gesture that it's like Eidus. So it has nothing to do with the actual halachic Kiddush. That's why it doesn't really matter halachically whether you stand for Vayichulu or not. It's just that some people don't like the idea of standing. Some people like the idea of standing. Some people love it. That it's Eidus, so you're supposed to stand up for it. But some people don't like the idea of standing for Vayichulu because it looks silly, like in the middle of one activity, like up, you sit, you stand, start up, then you sit down, then you get up to wash, then it's too much up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down.
They're davening, it's up and down all day long. I mean,
you should become Svardi. So Svardim sit for almost the entire davening, except Shemon Esrei. They sit when Kaddish is recited, they sit when Baruch Hu is recited, they sit all the time.
They sit
all the time. There's much less up and down in the Sephardi practice than in the Ashkenazi practice. Yeah. Okay. So, but al pi Kabbalah, the Arizal said that he liked this idea. He didn't reject it. Since you're supposed to stand in honor of Kiddush on Shabbos and Yontif, so this Kabbalistic idea that you're supposed to stand for Kiddush spread to a lot of different groups. It spread first to Sephardim, then to Chassidim, who adopted a lot of Sephardic practices. But a lot of Ashkenazim, among Sephardim, it's basically unheard of, because they all go like the Arizal. It's basically unheard of to sit for Kiddush nowadays, even though they certainly did sit for Kiddush 500 years ago. But among Ashkenazim and some Teimanim, who didn't adopt this Kabbalistic practice, that they continued with the more original way of making Kiddush, they continued to sit for Kiddush even nowadays. There were some great Kabbalists who sat for Kiddush. The Vilna Gaon was a very great Kabbalist, and nevertheless he sat for Kiddush. So it's not, don't feel that you're rejecting Kabbalah. If you
was a Kabbalist?
Oh, yeah.
Vilna Gaon, yeah, was a fantastic Kabbalist.
He didn't accept the Ari, though, right?
He did not accept him. He said, I'm a Kabbalist, he's a Kabbalist. I disagree with him sometimes. It's like saying the Vilna Gaon didn't accept the Rashba. Sometimes he agrees with the Rashba, sometimes he disagrees with the Rashba. You could argue that, the Rashba is a Rishon, the Vilna Gaon is not a Rishon, so he doesn't have necessarily a right to argue, but most people that the Vilna Gaon was on a level where he could argue with the Rishonim. So he thought he was on the level, he probably was, that he was on a level where he could argue with the Arizal based on his interpretations of Kabbalah. So you find that the Vilna Gaon, much less than the Arizal, changed the accepted practice based on Kabbalah. Hillel Kabbalah was mainly just a system of thought that didn't necessarily, but we keep the same practices that are the simple understanding of the Gemara and the Rishonim, and we don't change them al pi Kabbalah, whereas the Arizal school was much much quicker to introduce new practices based on their understanding of Kabbalah. Okay, so the first night of Sukkot, so most people keep, just like the first night of Pesach, so most people keep their regular minhag, whereas some people stand even if they normally have the minhag to sit, and the first night of Pesach, some people sit even if they normally have the minhag to stand. Okay?
Like
we have a lot of different minhagim regarding what position to assume for Kiddush. The Chassidim HaRishonim, continues the Sefer HaChinuch, the Chassidim HaRishonim, Lo hayu ochlin shum davar ki im basukkah. They would eat nothing except in the sukkah. That's like there are different stories brought in the Gemara that the servants brought the rabbis certain types of food, dates, water even, and they said, please take them up to the sukkah. Take them up to the sukkah. I want to eat these in the sukkah, which clearly indicates that it is a pious practice to eat every single thing in the sukkah. And there's a famous story about the Brisker Rav. So the Brisker Rav was known for his stringencies in adhering to halacha, trying to biyotze all the opinions that he could, as many opinions as possible, to fulfill the mitzvah according to all opinions. So they once saw that the Brisker Rav drank water outside the sukkah on Sukkot. So they said, Brisker Rav, you know, you're so so frum, you're always so careful about everything. So what? You're not you don't follow this this idea that you're supposed to that really pious practice is not to drink even water outside the sukkah on Sukkot. So he said, Ich bin ich kein Machmir. I'm not a Machmir. What did he mean, of course? He was machmir when there was a chance that he would really be violating the halacha according to some opinion. Here, it's clear that the halacha absolutely permits you to drink water and eat certain types of food outside the sukkah on Sukkot, and it's merely a personal pious extra thing to do to not to eat these types of things outside the sukkah. So he says, I'm not so pious that I'm doing extra things. I'm just doing what I consider to be the basic, which is I want to make sure that I fulfill the actual halacha according to all opinions. So it's a funny line, Ich bin nicht kein Machmer for the Brisker Rav, but it's cute.
It's wise. Well,
there's still walking
it's
the chickens around the block.
What?
They used to say that the brisket walk the chicken around the block to make sure that they have no broken bones.
Not around the block. There are people who, there is a problem that since chickens nowadays are bred basically to blow up like balloons, that they're bred to grow as quickly and grow as fat as possible in as little amount of time with the minimum amount of food that possible. So if you look at a diagram, it's very interesting. You should look at a picture of what a 6-week-old chicken looked like in the 50s, and what a 6-week-old chicken looks nowadays. It's, huge and enormous. So because they grow so quickly, so the briskers and others are concerned that they have a higher incidence of trephus, that of mortal defects in the birds, because they, for example, that one of the trephus is that leg tendons are broken. So you have leg tendons are broken. So if you have these tiny little, 6-week-old chicken legs supporting a huge fat chicken, so they can't walk as well. They can't, and they might have more deformities. So that's why there are some shchitas that actually, not commercial shchitas really, but some private shchitas where they will make all the birds walk a little bit, not necessarily around the block, but walk a few feet before they're shechted, to make sure that they're not too deformed.
Like an MRI machine.
Yeah, maybe. No, but the shechitas nowadays do check tzomes hagid, and they do check the leg tendons to make sure they're not ruptured after the shechita. There were these people in the Gemara. They were Amoraim, Tanaim, and Amoraim.
We're talking about Chassidim from the 16th century.
No. We're talking, these stories are already brought in the Gemara. So it is. But your point is very well taken about the about the treifas, that it is because of the more industrial method of raising animals nowadays actually has caused certain kashrus problems. Yeah, that's why some people, also because cows, for example, are given a diet of mostly grain, whereas naturally they graze on grass.
Oh, yeah.
So this causes sometimes their stomachs, one of their stomachs, to go to get displaced, and it actually goes to the wrong side of the body. So one procedure that they do to get the stomach back into the right place, there are many different veterinary procedures that you could do, but one of them actually involves puncturing the stomach. So puncturing the stomach, a punctured stomach, is one of the treifas. So that's why there was a whole tumult a few years ago where there were people like to make trouble, who were saying that milk is not kosher anymore. You know, milk is not kosher because a lot of the cows are operated on and they have a punctured stomach, which is one of the treifas. So the milk comes from a treif animal, and it's no good. So a lot of the poskim said that's not true, that for different technical reasons, because it's done to relieve the animal's illness, and the animal can live for many years, and because they don't holes that's made in a way where the holes aren't exactly holes. Rebelski has a long tshuva about this. I was just trying to make my way through it recently, actually, but it's very very technical. Some poskim feel is also why Breuer's actually stopped giving a hechsher to cheese that was made from non-Chol of Yisrael. That used to be that Breuer's used to be makpen on Chol of Yisrael for like plain milk products like milk and yogurt and soft cheeses. But for hard cheeses and butters, which cannot be made from non-kosher animals, so you have heterim already in the Shulchan Aruch, that you don't need Chol of Yisrael for that. So certainly in America, you know, where we have government supervision, that's even better than it was in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. So that's why there's more room to be made all about Chol of Yisrael, even for those who want to be makban Chol of Yisrael, by hard cheeses and butter. So Breuers used to give a hechsher to hard cheeses and butters that were not Chol of Yisrael.
Migdal, the two brands, Migdal and Holland.
They stopped giving hechsher to Migdal cheese because the Dayan of Breuers, actually, not Rabbi Posen, but the younger one, Rabbi Cohen, lives in Brooklyn. Rabbi Cohen was one of the progenitors of this issue, that he felt that that these types of cows that were operated on are not kosher, so the milk coming therefrom would also not be kosher. So then the Chol of Yisrael companies started to separate these animals out, and they don't take the milk from these animals, not necessarily because they hold that it's really usher, but because they just don't want people to scream that their milk is not kosher, so why do they need the headache? So they don't take the milk from these animals, but the non-Chol of Yisrael companies are makel on this, which is that they, obviously, they're not Jews there to separate the operated animals out. And they this problem currently is only with regular milk and not Chol of Yisrael, which is why some people are makbid on Chol of Yisrael, not because they hold that you need to be makbid on Chol of Yisrael, but because they don't want to get involved in this issue of the potential treifas. But again, many heavy-duty major poskim feel that this is not a problem. But my point is not to tell you that it's yes a problem or not a problem. My point in this whole excursus was to address your point, which is that the more unnatural, more industrial method of raising animals nowadays has actually affected the halacha as well, which is very interesting and something that we should perhaps think about more carefully. Mm-hmm.